It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have 3 square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us today, and happy Thanksgiving to each and every one of you. We have a lot to be grateful for, and I'll be talking with producer Steve about that here in just a little bit. But be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can find all of our most recent podcasts, as well as our most recent op-eds there. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter as well. And we would appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Very important show planned for you today. We'll be talking a bit about de Tocqueville, actually throughout the whole show. In the second, third, and fourth segment, we'll be talking with Dr. Brad Berzer. He is a professor at Hillsdale College. He is an expert on Alexis de Tocqueville. You won't want to miss that. Of course, we'll be talking with Jason McBride down at the bottom of the hour as well. The show, when we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. If you get into conversations this Thanksgiving dinner, that is a pretty simple thing, whether or not we have freedom or force. And again, you can say if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. It should be able to have its merit as it competes in the battle of ideas. And the other things that we ask, these questions that Rudyard Kipling, who was the author of The Jungle Book, he was born in 1865, he died in 1936. He says, I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And once again, as we're having our conversations at the Thanksgiving dinner table, these may be some questions that you may want to ask. I love robust discussions. But when you ask these questions that Rudyard Kipling has, I think that it can bring the temperature down if, in fact, there is a lot of robust conversation going on at your house. But again, I want to wish each and every one of you a very blessed Thanksgiving. I am so grateful for this team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Very thankful for each and every one of you listeners as well. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Producer Steve, there's a lot to be grateful for. We certainly have had a lot of challenges in this year 2020, but there is a lot to be grateful for. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my country. I'm grateful for my home. I'm grateful for food on the table. I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for creation. When you look at the stars and the moon and the sun comes up every day, there's so much to be grateful for. How about you, producer Steve?
You're going to make me really look bad here. I mean, you're so comprehensive, I guess. What comes to mind is the immediate, my home life, my wife and my immediate family here in and around the Denver metro area, and my extended family, other parts of the state and back in Pennsylvania where I grew up. So many, many things to think of. And while you were listing off your things, I don't know what makes me, my mind dashes off on a tangent, envisioning what we were saying a year ago. Before all these things, you know, came down like they did in this past year, and like you said, the things that we have endured, and it's just kind of fascinating how quickly things can change in a year.
It is, and that is why we need to continue to battle and engage in this battle of ideas. We need to understand the issues, search for truth, search for clarity, and then engage in conversation with those that we come in contact with, friends, family, colleagues, because this is an ideological battle that is going on right now, which is, I think, sometimes the toughest kind, producer Steve.
Thinking about our history in this country, I don't know. It's easy to think that we've got it as bad as it's ever been. But I think in recent interviews with some of our guests, it was made clear, like, for example, you know, the Civil War. How did they endure that? And when you put the death toll versus the general population in terms of the raw numbers alone, and you compare it to, say, what's going on today with the death toll with the virus, the proportions, I guess, is the word I'm looking for, are not even close, and how that just ravaged the nation.
And I'd actually done a couple of years ago some calculations on that. And at that time, I think the equivalent number of deaths for our population would have been like 6.6 million deaths. And that would have primarily been young men in their prime. And many of them then did not have children. So the effect of the Civil War was so significant. And I also think that we need to make sure when we look at the death number regarding the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus, is there has to be some context in that as well. The media is not giving us context on those numbers. But as you mentioned, the proportion in comparison to the sacrifice of the Civil War, it doesn't really compare. But Steve, I wanted to move over to, I know this is one of your favorite quotes, and researcher Patty had challenged me that she had done some research and there is no place that they are sure that Alexis de Tocqueville said these words. So I asked Dr. Brad Berzer, who will be our guest in the second, third, and fourth segment. He's a professor at Hillsdale College, whether or not de Tocqueville said these words. And he said, there is no place for sure that they know that he said these words. However, he could have. And I thought that was an excellent explanation on that. So Alexis de Tocqueville was a French aristocrat, diplomat, political scientist, and historian. He is best known for his works, Democracy in America and the Old Regime and Revolution. He was born in 1805. He died in 1859. And this is what he said. I sought for the greatness of and genius of America in her commodious harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. In her fertile fields and boundless forests, and it was not there. In her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. In her democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution, and it was not there. Not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Isn't that something?
I guess that's the first, it's kind of disappointing to know not, or to not know for sure that he said those words, but that is the first phrase that I became aware of that was attributed to him. And I thought, wow, does that spell it out for us? And after a year like 2020, when we, the potential for us to cease to be good, it seems to be running amok in the streets. And you think, well, okay, if it's going to be carried out to its logical conclusion, then maybe our best days really are not in front of us.
Steve, I know that there are so many challenges that are occurring in America today. But as I look back on our history, and we bring history into the show quite a bit, the divine provider had his hand on this country from the very beginning. Now, it wasn't easy. We went through the Revolutionary War, the Civil War. But this idea that people, everyday individuals, realized that there was something bigger than ourselves, and that thing was liberty, the responsible exercise of freedom. And we have, I think in a way, because of polite company, we've let there be a real assault on that. Because back in the 60s, we started to hear this narrative, you have your truth, I have my truth, multiculturalism, that in polite company, you don't talk about religion or politics. My question is what else is there? Is there anything else, Steve?
Well, sooner or later, it's going to take you back. I mean, no matter what you're discussing, if you're going to discuss it in depth, it's going to take you to one of those places, right?
It most definitely will. And if you don't have the intellectual curiosity to kick the tires on ideas and just take what the mainstream media, what the narrative, the prevailing narrative is out there, then I am concerned that our best days might be behind us. But Steve, we are growing. This little boutique show that we have is growing. Our reach is growing. People are hungry for truth and clarity, and that is never going to go out of style. Shedding light on evil is not going to go out of style. And light versus darkness, creativity and innovation versus destruction, those are the things that we are fighting right now. And I said to you last week, because you're in here every morning early, and that you, what we are doing, we're warriors. We're warriors for this American idea. We're warriors to pass on something good to the next generation, Steve.
Well, this American idea ultimately has to go back to our Judeo-Christian founding. And anybody who knows anything about architecture, the foundation of a structure, house, large office building, or anything like that, is totally dependent on the quality of that foundation and that it not erode. And that's, I guess, is what bothers me, going back to Tocqueville's statement here. And by the way, you referred to Dr. Berzer now as the Tocqueville expert, and somebody would be scratching their head, well, who needs the Tocqueville expert? Said, once you become more familiar with this man from France, you'll understand why an expert is a good thing.
Well, it is really a good thing, and I think America is good, and I think we will continue to be great, but we need to make sure that we engage in this battle of ideas and understand. I recommend read the Declaration of Independence today. Read the Constitution. Read the Gettysburg Address. These things will inspire you. And also, again, as you're sitting at the dining room table with your loved ones, your friends, and your family, maybe just talk about the Gettysburg Address and that great vision that Lincoln, he looked back in history, then he looked forward, and he affirmed that.
You know, I'm snarky enough when you say when you're sitting at your table with your friends and your family, in the right numbers, of course.
There you go. Speaking of numbers, I do want to say thank you to my sponsor, that is Hooters Restaurants. They have 5 locations, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs, and they're constantly evolving with all of these overreaching rules and regulations. For more information, go to HootersColorado.com. But while you're celebrating this weekend, celebrate small businesses. Order something to go from Hooters Restaurants and support them. I greatly appreciate them. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Brad Berzer.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving to each and every one of you. Wishing you a very blessed day. And be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming podcasts, as well as our most recent op-eds, and all of the guests as well. And you can go over to Facebook and give us a like. We greatly appreciate that as well. I am so excited about this show. On the line with me is Dr. Bradley Berzer. He is a professor of history, and he is the Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies at the Hillsdale College. Brad Berzer, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Ken. It's good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk with you as well, Brad. And I thought it was very appropriate today to talk about de Tocqueville. And we hear many different quotes that are attributed to him. And a lot of people may not exactly understand who he is. So who is Alexis de Tocqueville?
Yeah, Alexis de Tocqueville was probably the finest observer of American culture that we've had. He came to America from France, and he was of French nobility. But he came to America in March of 1831 and stayed through February of 1832. Traveled with his best friend. They went all across New England, all across the South, really explored as much as they could in America. Some people even credit them with founding the discipline of sociology, but they were more like journalists in the way that they interviewed everyone, anyone that they could find, whether whites in town or black slaves or American Indians. They just went through all of America, tried to find out what made America tick and what really made the American character. So de Tocqueville's just a fantastic observer. When he went back to France, he got pretty involved in politics, but unfortunately he died young. He died in 1859 when he was only 54 years old. So born in 1805, died in 1859, but really led a spectacular life, even if it was only 54 years long.
Well, and they put together, he wrote this book, Democracy in America. And Brad, I've heard of it. It's one of those things I'm like, I would like to read it. I
sure.
haven't. But you are doing a study on this, or have helped people understand this book, Democracy in America.
Yeah, so it's a two-volume work. The first volume came out in 1835 and mostly deals with the specifics of American history. The second volume, which was much more pessimistic, came out 5 years later in 1840, and it deals with the nature of equality. And in book one, in the first volume, equality is more or less celebrated, even though there are some moments where there's questioning of what equality is. But by 1840, de Tocqueville had become a little bit more pessimistic, and he's questioning the nature of equality and wondering about the future of America at that point. So there's a lot of good and a lot of bad in this. But really, it is just a spectacular look at American culture and the American character. De Tocqueville, you know, interestingly enough, Kim, he was very popular when he wrote. Then he kind of went out of fashion by the time of the American Civil War. He did not come back into fashion in American academia until after World War II. And since World War II, it's been kind of a standard text at universities. Even the left would teach de Tocqueville, though he's certainly no leftist by any means. He's really kind of the anti-Karl Marx of his day. But the book has been a fairly prominent kind of great work in American history, and really in Western civilization has been regarded as such since about 1946, 47. So has not really left academia since then.
Well, when he was traveling in America, this was several years before the Civil War. What did he see that was going on in 1835? What was his comments about America?
So he was mostly in favor of America. In fact, he really came over to celebrate America. It's odd. His commission from the king, the permission that he received from the French monarchy, was to come over and study America's prison systems, because at that point in world history, America was regarded, and I know this is so strange in 2020, but America was regarded as having the most humane and liberal prisons in the world, and the French monarch wanted to copy those for France. So de Tocqueville and his best friend, Beaumont, when they came over to America, they had been commissioned to study American prisons, but they became immediately fascinated by the idea of American democracy and American equality. So they did actually do what the king had asked of them. They wrote about the prisons, but their real love while they were over here was to study American equality. And de Tocqueville thought that within American history, especially coming out of our New England tradition, that there had really been not just a strain, but the essence of American history was based on this idea of both liberty and equality, that the New Englanders were really trying to balance those two things, and that they had found a good way of balancing both liberty and equality. So we know that there are times when liberty can be non-egalitarian, and there are a number of times when equality can be anti-libertarian. But de Tocqueville thought that the Americans had really struck a balance, especially in the town system that we had, and with the idea of selectmen and towns running themselves and towns being independent from each other. He thought there was a really good, strong, a good strain of both liberty and equality in America. So he was impressed with that, and that's what he wanted to study.
Okay, Brad Berzer, in 2020 America, we hear the word equality, and we are actually learning that the word equality for people that love freedom means the equality of opportunity. For those that are pushing towards socialism and communism, they are talking about equality of outcome. And ultimately, that doesn't work because it has to drag people down instead of lifting people up. What's your thoughts on this word equality in 2020 America?
Well, I'm totally with you, Kim. I'm in complete sympathy. I think that in 2020 America, we have perverted this word equality and made it this thing. And we saw this with Harris's ad right before the presidential election. We saw that ad in which she tries to argue that what we really need is a kind of material equality for everyone, where everyone is basically starting at the same point and ending at the same point. That is radically different from the kind of equality that de Tocqueville was talking about. De Tocqueville was talking about equality of opportunity, that is, by the law and in the sight of God, we are equal, but our talents are radically unequal. So, Kim, you are excellent at certain things, and you're probably pretty poor at certain things, and that's true for every one of us. There are things that I'm really good at, and there are things that I'm really bad at. But the things that you and I are good at are probably different one from another, because this is the nature of nature. Nature allows for all kinds of diversity, and it allows for a true diversity of talents. De Tocqueville was all in favor of an equality that allowed us to practice our different talents in the public arena, but he was absolutely not in favor in homogenizing us all into some kind of tapioca pudding. That is absolutely what he was against. That was not the kind of equality that he wanted, but he was very fearful that Americans had it within their character to look for that kind of equality that makes everybody dreadfully and uniformly equal. And that was one of his greatest cautions, and probably something that we should talk about, because he really, in that second volume of Democracy in America, he worried very greatly about this possibility that we could become this kind of uniform mass society that was not differentiated one from another.
Weren't they seeing that in Europe at the time, or what was going on over there, Brad?
Well, this had been a great problem with the French Revolution, because the French Revolution, out of which de Tocqueville's family had barely survived, and remember, he's coming to America in 1831. The French Revolution, in its formal phase, had been over since about 1793, 1794, so really a decade before de Tocqueville was even born. But the memory of the French Revolution was still very strong, especially among de Tocqueville's generation, because they knew what their parents had gone through, and they were very worried about that. Ken, it would be like for you and me and our generation, you know, we have a very, very vague memory of what happened in the 1960s. I was born in 67. We have a vague memory of that, but we know that the 60s had this radical impulse to it, and that was really de Tocqueville when he was writing. His generation knew about the radical impulse of the French Revolution, which had attempted to implement a kind of full radical egalitarianism, but it had done so at the cost of 50,000 innocent lives. So they knew that when you tried to implement that kind of equality, it would end in genocide.
Well, Dr. Brad Berzer, let's go to break. I came up with this quote that a lot of people get hurt on the road to utopia. And I'd like to come back and talk about, you said the statement that it would make them dreadfully equal, that was something that de Tocqueville was concerned about. So let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue with Dr. Brad Berzer. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride is on the line. Hey, Jason, what's a great Thanksgiving story that you have?
You know, we kind of have a neat tradition for Thanksgiving. My wife, before dinner, she'll put maybe two or three unpopped popcorn kernels by each person's plate. And then during dinner, each person has to pick up a kernel and talk about something they're thankful for the year. So, of course, the kids are always hoping to just get one kernel so they don't have to say much of anything. But it's a neat thing, you know. It gives you a chance with your family to maybe say some things that you haven't had a chance to. And, yeah, it could be a little bit awkward sometimes to come out and say nice things about another family member or something that you're very, very thankful for. And, you know, I think it's a great conversation starter. And instead of arguing at Thanksgiving, this gives you a chance to say something nice. So it's kind of a neat tradition we've always done.
And how does she decide who gets how many kernels?
Well, the people that she's probably mad at get more kernels.
Well, this Thanksgiving Day, there's a lot to be grateful for and gratitude. If you're grateful for something, you can't be hateful. So Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, thank you so much. We wish you and yours a very happy day.
Right back at you.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. Also, be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like. And it is Thanksgiving, a day to reflect on our blessings. It is a blessed day to live in America. I know there's a lot of things going on out there, but we have a lot of blessings. And I know you're all cooking and getting together with family and reflecting today, and it's just a great day to do that. I am so thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Bradley Berzer, and he is the professor of history and the Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies at Hillsdale College. And we're talking about de Tocqueville. Brad, it's so great to have you on the line.
Thanks, Kim. Always an honor.
You have written an important piece that people can find at theimaginativeconservative.org, Reflections on Tocqueville, the Pervasiveness of Equality. And in the previous segment, Brad, you had mentioned that de Tocqueville was concerned about making us all dreadfully equal. And you said we should talk a bit more about that. What's your thoughts?
Well, so de Tocqueville was worried that in our rush towards equality, so he argued that this move towards equality in the world was something that we had no choice over. That is, God had willed it. And he was very direct about this. He said it is a divine fact. It is a providential fact that the world is moving toward equality. But he said that there are two types of equality. There's the kind of equality that says to one another, we are equal because we are equal in the sight of God and before the law, and therefore, because of this equality, we all pursue our own excellences, whatever those excellences may be. You can think about Scripture and the idea of the Holy Spirit giving us these different gifts. Every person, of course, we're armed with the same kind of sinful nature, but we have these distinct gifts and attributes from God that we each have that are individual to us. Hence, we call them excellences, of course, and excellences can never be equal. They have to be individual. De Tocqueville said that there was the possibility that we would strive for an equality of excellences in the best sense. That is, we would say, Kim, this is what you were really good at. In community, you find that nature, you find your individualism, and you allow that individualism to flourish. But he said there's a dark side to this as well, and this would be the other form of equality in which we looked at one another, and I looked at you, Kim, and I saw your excellences, and rather than saying, brilliant, these are excellences, let Kim do what she needs to do, I say, God, why does Kim have this ability and I don't? What is it that makes me less than her? And therefore, I want to tear you down rather than build you up. So in that sense, we would all be equal, but we would be equal at the worst and lowest common denominator. So de Tocqueville said, the world has no choice. We're moving towards equality. But because of free will, we have the ability to choose either an equality of excellence or an equality of conformity, which would be terrible. So that's where he's warning us. And he argued that what we've seen in the world is that when we attempt to try and have this equality of conformity, we find not only does it lead to mass murder, but even where it may be not as dreadful as mass murder, we're still denying the very aspects of nature itself. There's a reason that every single creature has its uniqueness, and especially the human person. There's a reason for that, and this is not accidental. This is built into God's creation. It's built into the system that we are to pursue our gifts differently, but in concert with one another, not in conflict with one another.
Brad, the words that you just said in your first example, that we are equal in the sight of God and before the law, and that we are free to pursue our own excellences or our happiness, that is directly out of the vision, the words of the Declaration of Independence, as I see it.
Absolutely, and that's not accidental. I mean, de Tocqueville was very much in favor of the concept of natural right, that each individual has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we can only do that when we pursue what our gifts are. So whatever those gifts may be, and again, I hope you don't mind me being scriptural, but maybe the gift to counsel or the gift to teach or the gift, whatever it may be, right? These are the various things that we've been given. And it could be a physical gift. It could be maybe I'm excellent on the tennis court, or maybe I'm good in the classroom, or maybe I'm good at administration, whatever it may be. These are a variety of different things that we have to be able to pursue. And we do that through our own happiness and for our own happiness. But the great gift of that is that when we pursue our own happiness within the community flourishes as well. Right? We need those excellences to keep society moving and not to become stagnant.
And this, I call it the American idea, and that is what you just mentioned, our freedom to pursue our excellences, which that was for everyday people. And what we've seen that everyday people are creative and they're innovative, and it has created this big middle class. People have created wealth. They thrive. They prosper. They take care of their families. And that is so inherent in the American idea. The second that example that you gave is that people look at others and their excellences, and instead of internalizing, looking at themselves, saying, I have something that I'm excellent at, I need to find it and make sure that I do that, they tear other people down. And that is really the question that we are looking at in America today. And that is the idea of supporting creativity and innovation and building things, or destruction and tearing things down. And that comes out of envy. And it's an important conversation. That is what's happening in America right now, as I see it, Brad.
Kim, I agree with you completely, and I love the idea of this American idea. And I would say that, you know, we talked a little bit in the first segment about the 1960s, going back to that for a moment, our most Tocquevillian president that we've had was Ronald Reagan. And he wrote an excellent book in 1968 called The Creative Society, in which he argued, just as de Tocqueville did, that the United States would ultimately triumph over the Soviet Union because our society allowed for individuals to find their own excellences, whereas the Soviets were actually unnatural. So he was turning Marxism on its head. Marxists, of course, saying that they were the future. And Reagan said, absolutely not. You're completely against nature. And by being against nature, you will self-destruct. What we find ourselves now, and especially with what's going on with the predominant Black Lives Movement and with some of the radical movements that we see in America in 2020, is once again this re-embracing of that radical equality, the kind of equality that makes us all lowest common denominator and does not allow our excellences or individuality to flourish. And that's incredibly dangerous. And just the fact, I think about this, Kim, we've even seen in the propaganda of the left this year, they actually brought guillotines out, right? It's like they couldn't be more obvious in what they're doing and the fact that they're pursuing basically what the French Revolution had pursued.
And what happens, where I think, which I've struggled with this, and Trump, I love him or hate him, he has brought clarity to so many things that I felt that were percolating underneath the surface. So he's unveiled it, he's unmasked it. And there is this idea of defining people in groups, having them identify as groups instead of as individuals. And the American idea is really about individual freedom. And again, we are looking at these big questions right now in 2020 America.
I agree, Kim. And you know, the way de Tocqueville would put it is that we find our individuality best within community, because it's in community that we strengthen ourselves and we find what our strengths are and we sharpen those strengths. So in America, you can never really have individualism without also having strong community, and you can't have strong community without having individualism. So they really do play off each other. And de Tocqueville was very famous in his day, and I think should remain so to this day, very famous in really arguing that what Americans do best is we form communities with one another. We build hospitals, we build schools, we create businesses, we have families, all of these things. And of course, he was Catholic, but he recognized as well that in Protestant America, we built churches. And all of this, he thought, was a great way of showing that Americans could be purely individual while at the same time pooling their individual talents to create communities. And so he said this was really the great strength of America, that we had this ability to create these associations.
Brad Berzer, one of the things that we talk about on the show all the time is freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people. And you just mentioned that de Tocqueville said we had these communities, churches, hospitals. We were making these things happen in America without force, without government coming in and forcing it, taxing others to make this happen. We were doing it organically.
Absolutely. And we have been doing it from the very beginning. I just imagine we're celebrating this on Thanksgiving. Well, Thanksgiving celebrates the Pilgrim arrival in Massachusetts at Plymouth Rock. And the very first thing that the Pilgrims did when they arrived was they created their own civil society through the Mayflower Compact. All they needed scripture, they needed the common law, and they needed the natural law. And that was enough for them to create their own community. So America, from its very origin, is about the founding of community by individuals. So from the very beginning, that was part of our DNA.
In 2020 America, we've got just a couple of minutes before we go to our next break. In 2020 America, it seems that we're just struggling with this so much on what de Tocqueville said regarding our basic the scripture and these natural rights given by God. Can we get this back, Brad Berzer?
Well, I think we can, and this is where I suppose the Reaganism in me comes out. Reagan always said that we're always a generation away from despotism, but we're also always moments away from hope. And we have to have that audacity to believe in hope. And that's one of the great ironies about the virtue of hope. Hope is what it is. We either hope or we don't. When we lose hope, there is no hope. When we have hope, there is hope. And that sounds so simple, and yet it's really complex. So if we think about the nature of who and what we are, Kim, I believe very strongly that there is always the possibility of recovery, because it's in our nature to pursue what we want. It's in our nature to pursue these excellences. I don't really think the kind of dread conformity that we see the left promoting is something that's sustainable over time. And we've seen that in history. You know, the Soviet Union in large part fell because it was, as Reagan said, unnatural. So it may be a while. It may take 30, 40 years, but I think there's always the possibility of recovery. It's just built into who we are.
It is. It's also, I think, part of the American spirit. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Dr. Brad Berzer, and we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, I am so grateful for another one of my great partners, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have knives from the best blade makers throughout the world. Great place to do your Christmas shopping. Their new website is up and running. Check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Dr. Brad Berzer.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show, and happy Thanksgiving. Wishing you all a blessed Thanksgiving today. And I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Brad Berzer. He's a professor of history. He is the Russell Amos Kirk Chair in American Studies at Hillsdale College. And we're talking about de Tocqueville. And during the break, Brad, you and I were talking about this last segment, and you said that de Tocqueville was concerned about a soft despotism. Explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, he, in the very end, remember he gets very pessimistic in book number two. So in book number one, it's the celebration of American life. But in book number two, in volume number two of Democracy in America, he starts analyzing the problems of radical equality and what can happen, especially if we choose the wrong forms of equality. And he argued that if America ever became despotic, if it ever became tyrannical in some way, it would probably do so over time, very slowly, very, very gradually, what we would call in the 20th century, we would have called creeping socialism. This is the kind of thing that de Tocqueville argues. So the chances in America of, in one generation, a tyrant arising, whether as a party or an individual, and just crushing us in the way that the Nazis, say, crushed the Jews in the 1930s, de Tocqueville thought that wouldn't be a part of our heritage. We may have a tyranny just as bad as the Nazis, but it would be very slow, very gradual. And it would, as he said, it would creep into the social frame so subtly that we would all become so used to it before we would even know that we were being tyrannized. And that's what he calls a soft despotism or a democratic despotism. So if you don't mind, Tim, I'll quote from him on this.
Please.
In the way that he puts this in volume two, He says, it seems to me that if despotism came to be established among the democratic nations like America of today, it would have other characteristics than what we saw in the French Revolution. It would be more extensive and mild. It would degrade men without immediately tormenting men. So I think that the type of repression by which a democratic people such as the Americans are threatened will resemble nothing of what has preceded it in the world, and our contemporaries cannot find an image of it in their memories because it has not yet existed. I seek in vain myself for an expression that exactly reproduces the idea that I'm forming of it, but I believe that the old words of despotism and tyranny simply will not work. I want to imagine that under these new features, this new despotism, this soft despotism, would present itself to the world. And what do I see? An innumerable crowd of similar and equal men who spin around relentlessly in order to gain small and vulgar pleasures with which they fill their soul. But each one of them, withdrawn apart, is like a stranger to his destiny and to the destiny of all the others. And his children and his friends in particular will not recognize him as anything other than one specific member of the human species. And that's the argument that de Tocqueville makes, Ken, that this will become this kind of widespread conformity, and we will no longer be able to see the individualism, not only within ourselves, but within each other. And that is what I think is very dangerous. So he concludes this section by saying, after having thus taken each individual one by one into its powerful collectivist grip, and having molded him as it pleases, then a sovereign power will extend itself, its arms, like a big sister, over the entire society. It will cover the surface of society with a network of small, complicated, minute rules with which the most original minds and the most vigorous souls will not be able to break through beyond the crowd. It will not break the will of man. It will soften the will of man and bend and direct the will of man. That I think, is incredible, Ken.
I feel like we're living that right now, Brad Berzer.
Exactly. And I think we really have been probably since the New Deal in various, with ups and downs, of course, breaks from it in the 1980s. But I think overall, this has been the trend of society. So again, he tells us, he says, rarely will we see it tyrannize us directly, but it will hinder, it will repress, it will enervate, right, take our energy away. It will extinguish, it will stupefy. And finally, it will reduce each one of us to being more, nothing more than a member of a flock of timid and industrious animals in which the government is the shepherd.
Did Tocqueville said that?
Yeah, I'm quoting directly.
Oh, my.
Absolutely.
Gosh. I'm just.
So that's the soft despotism.
And that is what we are at right now, I think, in America. And Brad Berzer, I have another show, America's Veteran Stories, which we're bringing over to KLZ 560 and 100.7 FM at the beginning of the year. But I've interviewed over 140, 150 World War II veterans as well as other veterans.
Fantastic.
It's an honor. But as I look at and listen to their stories, I feel a responsibility to not become what you just described that de Tocqueville talked about. And I see with this whole COVID-19 thing that is being used to move us towards this soft despotism, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And we see it moving more rapidly than we have before. And I think de Tocqueville's point is it can do that because it's already laid the foundation of creating rules and not allowing us to think beyond what those rules are. De Tocqueville says, and it was not a part I quoted, but he says, one of the most dangerous things about this soft despotism is it will not take away our free will. It will put so many laws and rules out there to cover us that we'll forget that we even have choices. So we won't even think beyond what the choices are that are given to us. We'll see those as enough and not move beyond that. And that's exactly what I think has been happening throughout 2020, both through the kind of radical movements as well as the softer movements of COVID lockdowns. Now, imagine how much we've accepted that, Ken, as a society. You and I may rail against it, but we're obviously strange compared to most of society at the moment. which seems to be more or less in tune with the lockdowns. And that, I think, is a very dangerous thing.
It is a very dangerous thing. As we are celebrating Thanksgiving here in 2020, which different states, your state in Michigan, my state here in Colorado, they really are saying people shouldn't get together. I mean, what is living if you can't get together with the people that you love? And I find this somewhat insidious. And I think I'm grateful for COVID-19. I call it the COVID-19 Wuhan China virus reaction disruption, because it has really taken the veil off on what has happened. We've had politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that say, we're going to reach across the aisle. Well, we've reached across the aisle and we've given our freedoms away. And the veil is off on that. And I'm very encouraged that many people are paying attention and that we are Americans and that we are going to step forward, step into this to make sure that we protect America and pass hope, pass freedom, pass this on to the next generation. Brad Berzer, what's your thoughts on that?
I agree with you totally, and it's very much worth remembering that even if de Tocqueville is right and we have this soft despotism, we also have the inheritance, as you said, Kim, earlier, of the American idea and our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is also a part of our DNA, and that's the part that I hope in the long run wins out. But I am completely with you. I cannot imagine not spending Thanksgiving with my family. If this is not a family vacation, is this not a time for us to come together as families and as groups and as friends? And there is no time. That's what Thanksgiving is. We give thanks for our ability to create these communities and yet to remain individuals with natural rights, too. That's so important to who and what we are.
Well, for sure. And leadership, you had mentioned the word hope. And we have leaders that are trying to put fear. We have that happening out here in Colorado. I know that you do as well as in Michigan. Fear is a really powerful emotion. And they're using fear, I think, to put forth a soft despotism. But a real leader provides hope and provides solutions. And I'm just thinking about Churchill during World War II. It was pretty dicey for the Brits, but he continued to talk about hope instead of fear. We've got maybe about 3 minutes left right now. What's your comments on that, Brad Berzer?
Well, I'm with you, Kim, on that. And I love to think back to that time period of the 1930s and 40s, because you can imagine if you were an Englishman in 1939, and you're watching the Nazis march, you're watching the Soviets march, the world just looks like it is going to hell in every way. And it takes the courage of someone like a Churchill to come forward and to say, we must find our best selves. It's only through our best selves that we can conquer this. And we have our president in America talking about the only thing to fear is fear itself. He's right about that, but it's Churchill who's really leading the Western world and saying, this is not enough. We must be able to find our best selves, and we must resist both the tyrannies of the Nazis and of the Soviets. And I think that was a critical moment in Western civilization. We have it bad right now, Kim, and there's no doubt that our society is a bad place, but I still don't think we have it as bad as, say, an Englishman did in 1939. We still have all kinds of hope, and we have an economy that, despite the fact that the lockdowns are trying to shut that economy down, that economy keeps chugging along, which is amazing in and of itself. And we have things that are much to our advantage. And again, we have in our DNA, we have the history of America and of the Declaration and of the Constitution and these things that can inform us to be better people than we might naturally be.
Well, and as de Tocqueville said, as we pursue our, I hadn't ever heard this term, we pursue our excellences, and again, pursuit of our happiness. There is so much to be grateful for today in America 2020, but we have a responsibility, Brad Berzer, to step up and get our brain around these issues and with our words, to talk with our friends and our family and our colleagues to push back on this soft despotism and make the case for the equality of our pursuit of our excellences, the pursuit of our happiness. What's your final thought, Brad Berzer?
Well, again, I'm in complete agreement, Kim. And think about the kinds of advantages we have. No matter how nasty Facebook or Twitter might be, we are at a position right now where we can speak publicly and not, I mean, love the fact that you have a radio station, Ken, that you have a radio, several radio shows, and that you are getting the word out. But every one of your listeners can do that as well by not backing down on Facebook, by not backing down on Twitter, by being on social media and reminding everyone what does it mean to be an American? What does it mean to be an individual? What does it mean to be a good person? We have that ability right now, and we may be silenced, but the voice will still be there. And frankly, it's good for our soul when we speak out and do the right thing, even if no one is listening. That doesn't make our virtue any less because we didn't have an audience. It's still the right thing to do.
Oh, Dr. Brad Berzer, this has just been a great interview. I wish a very happy and blessed Thanksgiving to you and your family.
You too, Kim. Thank you.
And our quote for today is from Alexis de Tocqueville. He said, "I know without the Creator raising his voice that the stars in space follow the curves traced by his fingers." Oh, my friends, today be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.